Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Buy or sell at Mid-Delta's pre-harvest auction, Friday, August 8th. Tractors, combines, and more with live online bidding at msauction.com. Call 662-299-2414. Mid-Delta Auction, across from Cannon Motors.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Guess who's home? It's good to be back. Hello, everybody. I have lots of thank yous that I should be adding into the program today. First and foremost, of course, is to thank Mark Peaches Patrick. I understand he has several more names now, but I'm still going to call him Peaches. There are very few people that even want to do this, and fortunately, some of them are terrific at it, and Mark is one of those people. I appreciate him being here so much. So I really appreciate the feedback. Y'all have been real sweet telling me how much you liked him being here and how funny he and Lance were. And now I'll bring back my elementary school mode and try and get y'all back under control for a minute. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's good to be home.
Welcome back. Yeah, it's always great to have you back. But I know you had a very productive and wonderful time down south of here.
I would like to say that I was at the Racine Cheese Festival, but there are not that many people around that will get that joke anymore. So
yeah, I don't know that.
I was far to the south and enjoying myself a lot and getting a lot of things done. Oddly enough, there's stuff that has to get done. So there you are. Before that, of course, was the Bottle Tree Tour, and everybody was so sweet. It was such a good weekend for Fondren, for my neighborhood, and for everybody in the garden world. It was terrific. I appreciate all of y'all. And, of course, it was so much fun to be at Fondren Yard doing radio. It's just a treat bright and early in the morning. Trey is already in with us today, and indeed, dear me. Let's move on across this one to the next week. How about that? I'll look at today. A friend of mine sent this particular meme to me, and I just thought, Trey's got to have this. So I'm psychic, Trey. Good morning, because I hadn't talked to you this week. You know, if you don't rake leaves, they turn into soil, right? They don't break into your house and drink all your wine or anything. And there are people who have a frantic attitude about leaf raking. I do hope that you will rake your leaves, at least if they are deeper than an inch or two on your lawn, for example, or even in a flower bed, just because that's too much. When the rains begin in the winter, sometimes that ends up being a soggy mess, first of all. And second of all, it can actually, if it's not a rainy winter, what little water there is ends up being in those leaves and not in your soil below. So, and you don't want to shade your lawn completely, but please don't be out there at 5 o'clock in the morning blowing those leaves around just to make yourself feel better. Wait until 8. I think that's a little more polite. But the raking leaves, of course, then goes immediately into the compost pile or in just the leaf pile. You don't have to put in anything else. You don't have to put in what, you know, my favorite, of course, are coffee grounds because I have a lot of coffee grounds. But there are a lot of things you can put into a compost heap, and there are a lot of things you don't have to. And, for example, leaves are one of those things that will break down on their own over time. It'll take longer if you leave them alone and don't turn them, don't add anything to it, but they'll still break down. It's a very simple way of getting a little bit more of what you're looking for in, frankly, what you want to mulch with and also what you want to add to your soils. So welcome into the Garden Mama Show. Thank you very much for being here. I appreciate all the – I get the most interesting emails from y'all. What was the name of that plant? And no, nothing else, just – interesting things. I'm always tempted to say something, but there's really not anything I can say to that. You can, however, email me anytime you want to, mamaonair@yahoo.com, when I'm not on the show. And I will, if you will do that, I will answer your question, but you got to give me the whole question or a little more information. On the other hand, when I'm here, when I'm happy to tell you that this text line is the most wonderful thing, but we also have phone lines. So you know how to get to me. Get in touch. Let's talk about stuff. I have an interesting thought today, and that is that there are plants that I would like to have that are not – I'm just pushing the margins. You know, I grow that variegated shell ginger, which, of course, I saw – much farther south than here this week, blooming at 8 feet tall. Mine is 3 feet tall and has one flower, and it's the end of the season. So there are things that are a little bit pushy in terms of the plants that I like to grow. But there are others that will absolutely surprise you and do beautifully. We've had such interesting couple of years. People have been very concerned about what's going to survive and what's not. I'll tell you what's doing an amazing job just about everywhere are camellias and sasanquas. I have seen more budded up, some flowering, some, you know, on their way to beautiful, beautiful displays this fall and winter, of course. But that's a plant that I really can't tell you enough about how much they add to your garden. They're not only evergreen, so they provide a real structural element year-round, but they're also, of course, beautiful flowers and something to look forward to in the wintertime. I think it's great. Beautiful, beautiful morning glories from Mike today. These are lovely, lovely. I'm a big fan of these morning glories. I hope that you're able to collect some seeds and keep some of them going. Now, I know that some of them are hybrids, but on the other hand, they probably have some pretty interesting parents, too. So thank you for sending those so we can see them. We appreciate all of that. We love for you to get in touch on our text line, send us pictures of your garden, and then you can get with us on supertalk.tv and see other people's pictures of their gardens. That's 601-879-4395. I know you have that already tattooed on your hand, but for those who might be new to the audience, I like to say that number every now and then. Thank you so very much for being so much a part of this program and really all the time. I'm excited about herbs. Now, here's what happened. I have, y'all know that I grow a bunch of kitchen-type herbs, and the two that I grow most all the time quite successfully are oregano and thyme. And yes, I have one big pot of thyme, so it's not a problem. But the other pot dried out badly while I was away. Even though it got watered, it was a rough time for it. And frankly, now that I've examined it, the roots were completely encasing the container. So there wasn't a whole lot of availability for the plant to get the water that was being put on it because it was just running out the bottom. That's one of your signs that you need to repot. Please do it sooner than I did. So what I did was, if you ever run into this situation, there's still lots of leaves, but they're very, very dry, and the stems underneath are completely nude. So what I did was to cut off all of those stems, put them into a plastic bag like you would have produce in, and I've been shaking them now for a day or so, and I've got a wonderful, almost probably a cup or more of well, maybe not quite. Yeah, I bet it is a cup of dried thyme leaves. Well, that's delicious. You know, people actually work hard to get herbs to dry sometimes, and I think it's important for us to understand sometimes we can do ourselves a favor and the herbs as well. But when we talk about these perennial herbs, we really are talking about things that act just like, for example, the daylilies or the black-eyed Susans or something else in your garden, they all come back. And these will come back. What I've done is to take that particular planting out, cut it into sections, and now I've moved it into another couple of beds. It will do fine there. But there are some, you know, the summer annuals, things like basil that we really love, will get killed by the frost. So that's why we tend to preserve them before it gets too cold, either freezing them in oil or in water, or drying them in some cases. I don't find basil dries very well for me, but you probably have better success than I do. Whether you're going to grow things now or not really depends on your setting. So, for example, we really want always at this time of the year to be putting in the parsley if you haven't already done that, because it is an overwinter annual. It's going to do a lot better growing from now through spring than it will growing from spring through fall in about 99% of the cases. Same is really true for dill. And dill we can plant it in the very, very early spring and get a beautiful crop by the time weather warms up. But if you wait too late to plant it, you end up with less dill and more seed heads, and that's not really what you're looking for most of the time. It's also time to plant cilantro. And by the way, if you're planting flat leaf parsley, yes, you should label those pots, because if you plant those containers and come back one evening to grab something, you may grab the wrong one and surprise yourself. No, cilantro does not taste like soap to me, but I understand it might to you, and I understand that you might not want to grow it. Well, that's okay. For those of you, and I'm not going to grow this one, fennel is another plant to start in the fall, because it has it's better in cool weather. It's going to do more for you and have a little bit better time as well. One of the things that we think about all the time is what book are we going to look at? What herbs are we going to understand? If you really want a broad look at the world of herbs, and by that we mean herbaceous green plants, including these ones that you eat and so many others that are in the same boat, so to speak, that is to say they're green-stemmed plants, don't overlook one of the most classics, the book Southern Herb Growing, which came from Madeline Hill back in the 80s. It's a really wonderful plant book. And her writing, and her daughter was her, I believe, her editor as well as her co-author. I could be wrong about that. But at any rate, they're legends. The book is an absolutely iconic thing. So it's Southern Herb Growing. Look for that one. I don't know how to tell you how much information. You'll find yourself stuck in that one. You'll be reading it just like you would read any kind of a novel. Some of our gardening efforts at this time of year really do go to that food business. If you haven't planted your garlic, please do that. Most people's is up by now. Mine's not. But I'm going to give you one other little tip today in that regard, and that is here. Guess what? It is actually the right time to plant another round of carrots and radishes and beets. Why is that? Because as my correspondent has told me, sent me a nice email about it, when the moon is full and it is in an earth sign, the earth is ready to accept those seeds. I'm not telling you this because I know it, but I certainly have planted plenty of carrots and beets, and yeah, they grow pretty well. So now's a good time to go ahead and get those in here in mid-October. I don't know exactly what y'all are up to today, but I know I'm going to be making more space indoors for my plants. That was a bit of a surprise when everything suddenly got cooler than I thought it was going to get. So they're all jammed up in the office. You would have a hard time figuring out that somebody lived there that knew anything about plants, because they're not in exactly the right conditions. So I wanted to talk with you today. Hope you'll give me some ideas and let me have some help figuring out where to put them all, how to light them, which windows are better than others. I've got opinions about all of that, and I'll bet that you do too. So we can talk about that today. Talk about us. In my social media, got several notes last night. I put in a picture of sempervivens, which is one of my favorites, and artillery plant. They're both succulents that can grow well together. And one of the things that someone noted who wrote to me last night was that's in a clay pot, and so that's exactly right. If you're going to grow succulents indoors, you may want to consider the benefits of clay. Clay not only warms up quickly when the sunlight hits it, not as quickly as black plastic, but it does warm up quickly sitting in your window. But it also has the ability to breathe, which the black plastic pots or green plastic do not have. And in the case of growing succulents, and if you're growing cactus, you don't want those to be hurt by all of the situations that can happen in that circumstance, okay? So give them a break. Give them a clay pot so you're not tempted to overwater. And if you do, the water can evaporate out through the clay instead of your crazy day turning into a crazy problem for your plants. Someone said to me about a long time ago, and then I heard it again recently from someone else, when you get nervous, you groom your plants. So if you go to this person's house and every yellow leaf and every old flower is taken off, you may need to understand she's not in a very good mood. You might want to, or go help perhaps if she'll let you. That might be the way to do that. Today is Bridge Day. Now, the question is that a card game or is that a piece of architecture? Well, it's both. Does anybody know what the first bridge? You know, this is one of those things. I should have had my tripod. I've actually been to the first bridge built in the United States and didn't know it. You need to read those historical markers, friends. We miss a lot of things when we don't do that. So we'll talk about that today. Get into some ideas about I don't know about card games. I do know that bridge comes from the game whist, and my relatives played whist, but I've never played it. I played a little bit of bridge, was terrible at it, gave that up. But I don't know. Somebody else needs to tell me, you know. Somebody needs to tell me. Well, how do we know if we're ever going to be good at bridge or if we're just going to sit there and be, well, it's not that the person's not the dummy, but there is always that dummy. But it does come from three-handed whist. Interesting. Funny stuff. I really think that's beautiful. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, okay, now I get to, since y'all are going to see pictures of this, I get to tell you one of the things that I was up to last week. Those of you who have been asleep might not know that my daughter's getting married in a minute. And one of the things that we're working on have been the dried flower petals for throwing instead of seeds or rice, and we have plenty of that. And now we have the magnificent seed pods of golden rain tree, which are now lacquered. They're just beautiful. So when you see these pink pods on supertalk.tv, you will know what you're looking at. You're looking at golden rain tree. Can't grow it much further north than maybe Hattiesburg. Y'all tell me, do they grow there? But it's a neotropical. I like that, neotropical tree. How about that? Ooh, beautiful angel trumpets in Caledonia. So gorgeous. They're planting strawberries. Oh, fun. We'll talk about that too this morning. This is the Garden Mama Show. It's good to be home.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.ms.gov.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Shovel, reminding you how important it is to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig anywhere in or around any homeowner's yard. It doesn't matter if you're putting in a new mailbox, installing a fence, French drain, sprinkler system, even a flower bed. You need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig, or you could end up responsible for a water line leak, utility line with gas or propane, or even worse. Safety is in your hands. Call 811 every dig, every time.
The best make.
For those of you who don't happen to know, this is a little tune called Althea's. When I very first started doing radio, I was determined that every song would have a flower or plant or some reference in it, and almost all of them do. But Althea's was always one of my very favorites because I wanted to name something Althea. So anyway, ironically, I was called to someone's yard last week to look at some Altheas that had literally been folded down. They're still in the ground. They haven't heaved out, but the wind and the storms had literally laid them over. The good news about that kind of plant, Althea is, of course, the woody relative of hibiscus that we're more familiar with, but they have that same robust quality. So, yes, you can. If yours have happened to have that problem, they get blown over by the wind, you can certainly cut them literally in half late in the winter after they've lost all their leaves. And you can also thin out some of those canes, because sometimes the force that causes the plant to keel over is just as much its own top weight as it is the wind. The wind plays on it, but if it's not as if it doesn't have as many small branches, if it has a few bigger branches, it's going to be a better result. So I think that's a really good one to put for you. Good question about planting strawberries. Good morning, Caledonia. The strawberries that we plant in October are really going to do best for us. When we plant them later in the year or when we plant them in the springtime, plastic flat, so there's good air circulation around them, put in the garage. Don't let them freeze. Don't let them get in the sun. They'll be fine. Caladiums are a really fun plant, and if we keep them and keep going, I think we'll have a better time with them. I like that. Let's see. All right. Now, I love this, Mike. You always ask the best questions. Devil's trumpet. I just talked about angel's trumpet, so now he wants to know about devil's trumpet. Angel trumpet flowers hang down. Devil trumpet flowers face up, first of all. But it's not usually called devil's trumpet. It is in some places, but it's also known as datura, and it has several other names as well. But the point is that it is the one that has the flowers that grow up. Both of them need very warm, sunny roots. You know, the space where the plant grows needs to be nice and sunny, not too much mulch around them. And generally speaking, the daturas bloom sooner than the angel trumpets, but they don't bloom as much. So that's the answer to that one. You got some beautiful pictures coming in today at supertalk.tv. I know the name of this angel trumpet, and I can't call its name. I apologize for that. But that's a beautiful one. That gold is a gorgeous color. There's a lot of breeding in this plant. You see different colors over the years as things get enough stock to be able to be released, and that's kind of fun. I like that. I have, yeah, I'm kind of stuck on its bridge day. I'm remembering how badly I played bridge, and I'll bet there's some of y'all that just play great bridge, but it's not me. Oh, good. The Halloween decorations are rolling in. Some pretty hydrangeas. That's lovely. Really sweet. Thank you, Paula. Good morning. I don't have a scarecrow, but I now have a turkey. So I'm going to – now, I don't have any Thanksgiving music, so you won't hear that, but I am going to put my turkey where he can be seen and get pictures of him, because he's pretty cute. Every now and then you have to appreciate that. Oh, that's beautiful. Lovely garden. You're showing us such pretty pictures. Thank you, Lance. That's lovely. By the way, the Pennypack Creek Bridge is the oldest bridge in the United States of America. No one guessed. I'm just going to tell you. Guess what? Probably not even in the flashcards. But it is now known as the Frankford Avenue Bridge, and that's what I have actually seen. If I had known, if I had read the marker, that would have told me that the Pennypack Creek Bridge is the oldest bridge in America, established in, 1697. So we've had problems with bridges ever since, but we still need them. So that's why we work on them so much. That's why infrastructure is so essential. This is, in fact, it's located in the Holmesburg section of Philadelphia, northeast Philadelphia. Interesting. Pretty. Nice stuff. Oh, gorgeous petunias. Those are lovely. Lovely. There are so many opportunities when we look at the things like the sempervivans and some of the flower seed heads, and they're so intense. You could see them and not even know that it was a plant. You might think that someone had blown it out of glass or carved it out of something. The heads on those celosias are just magnificent, just beautiful plants. Thank you for sharing with us. Okay, here's a topic that you may or may not want to know. How do you remember how to ride a bike, for example? Things that you learned, maybe if you're a grown-up, you learned them 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago, okay? How do you do this? The different kinds of long-term memory have not really been studied as much as they might should have. This is from the Paulson School of Engineering and Applied Sciences at Harvard. The work, for example, just like short-term and long-term memories, you might be able to remember who your second-grade teacher was, but you might not be able to remember, you know, what you bought at the store yesterday. I mean, the different ways that those are both considered long-term memory, but they work differently. And what we found out is that they realized that the median temporal lobe is the long-term memory, like, for example, names and dates and all those kinds of things can be very, very damaged if that part of the brain gets hurt. But they can remember, the folks that have that impact can have short-term memory, be completely fine. So interestingly enough, this is one of the things that people have always been interested to know about. But what we're finding out now is that those memories actually form in different parts of the brain. And the cerebellum, if you all learned your brain parts, the cerebellum is really the part of it that directs all of this. It's critical for the information of those long-term skill memories. If you learn to ride a bicycle when you were eight and you're not eight anymore, how you remember it is how it's stored, and that's where it's stored, is through the work of your cerebellum. When you can talk about things in a conversation, but you can't remember exactly what came before that conversation, that's a short-term issue, and that's impacted differently. But I thought it was real fascinating with this. I once had the pleasure and honor of working with a man who could remember how to play baseball, but he couldn't remember what bus to take to go home from the place where we were teaching him because of the way his brain had been affected. And watching him learn how to give himself cues and learning how to stuff really taught me a lot about how my brain could work better, and certainly his did after a period of time. So it's kind of fun. Let's see. Good question from Ray. Do we put them in containers so that they can be taken inside in the extreme cold or in the beds or where? It depends on the herb. If you have the oregano and thyme, you have the other perennial herbs like that, you know, we grow them outdoors. You can grow them in the garden. You can grow them in a container and leave the container outside, unless you want the fresh herbs to be available to you in January. In that case, yeah, you probably want to make at least one small container of it that you can bring indoors. I like to grow the perennial herbs in containers because it gives me more flexibility, and then I can divide them up. But I do have some growing in the garden beds as well, and they do fine. They make a nice ground cover in many cases. I have a couple of different plants that maybe are not rosemary is not entirely hardy, so I do grow, but it can grow in zone 8 here in central Mississippi. It can grow out in a really dry bed or in, for example, a clay pot. It's another good place for rosemary to grow. The sage and thyme the bay tree that I grow gets some damage, but it stays outdoors. Now, I do, the ones I leave outside, I make sure that I harvest enough to get me through. But, for example, ginger is going to be hardy. Lemongrass, maybe not so much. You might need to be a little bit farther south of me to have it actually come back as vigorously as it could. That's one of the issues, is how vigorously does that plant come back? I find that thyme and oregano, for example, come back pretty well. But things like lemon balm and the mints, those are all going to be absolutely performers. And even chives, if you can stand chives, because, you know, they're going to seed all over everywhere, but they will be perennialized. Some people put them in a container so they can control that overseeding or reseeding. You have your choices, Ray, and I like both. That's nice. Nice, very nice plants. Thank you. Beautiful things. Y'all are quite good at what you do, my friends. There's another question here that I'm interested in trying to understand a little bit more about. So I'll check on that one during the break. I guess that's another conversation. That's not for me. Okay. I can move on to the next piece of this particular puzzle. You know, people are funny. People like stuff, and then they don't like stuff. I had the pleasure of being in a garden that was planted by people who clearly knew what they were doing. And yet, over time, and with a little bit of neglect because they're not there anymore, the things that have really come to the surface and big, really are big shining plants there are not what you would expect. For example, the Vitex tree fell over, but it continues to grow and is just absolutely beautiful. So sometimes you have to just see how things turn out. And if you like them and if they work, don't let anybody tell you not to grow that particular plant or not to try it in that particular place. It may or may not work, but if you don't try, you don't know. That sounds like something I should have said a long time ago. If you don't try, you don't know. Stick around. We'll talk gardening.
Grady Mama, where you been so long? You been hiding out, I know that's true. Grady Mama, shall
heard the catchphrase, nothing's free? That's not true when you are a business working with the Mississippi Department of Rehabilitation Services. When you hire individuals with disabilities, we can help by offering customized training and internships paid for by our agency. A business relations specialist in your area will work with you every step of the way to ensure that you have a thriving and competent workforce. We provide these services at no cost to your business. Call us today at 1-800-443-1000 or visit our website at mdrs.ms.gov.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Go with your gut.
Yes. We are singing and dancing in here this morning. Welcome to the Garden Mama Show. This is what we do. Great questions. Y'all are doing beautifully with these today. Okay, Kathy, I'm going to find out. I'll have to look at that one a little closer and pull that picture up a bit closer to me. Mike, I'm not sure what that was about, but now coming to us from Jeff in Grenada, I have so much empathy for Jeff at this moment in time because I have had this situation myself. You got a hill and you have to weed eat it. If you can plant it with something that you don't have to weed eat, life would be a better thing. And I agree with him so much. Now, this is to say, there are a lot of choices. I've told the story before. I hope you have heard me refer to the person that I watched for years mow a slope with a lawnmower on a rope, which looked sort of like a bungee cord and kind of a really bad idea. But still, Okay, I get that, but this whole business of having to weed eat slopes is very tough. There's a good article, and I did send it to him, but y'all probably want to know what it is, too, in the Cooperative Extension bag. Mississippi State, of course, is who I'm talking about right now. This is Easy Ground Covers for Mississippi Lawns is what it's called, but it applies across zones 7, 8, and probably even 9 if I look far enough. These are all going to be things that are less than 3 feet tall and can be planted, and pretty much once they are cultivated into filling the space, they're pretty well comfortable. Now, one of the things about filling space with ground covers, if you're in an area where things are not going to get a great deal of attention, plant thicker. For whether it's seed or whether it's plants, whatever you're doing, go a little bit thicker because you need to increase the survivability of that plant in that difficult environment. The other thing to remember is that the first 2 years are the most important in the life of that plant. The plant may be able to be there for 20 years, but only if the first 2 years work for you. So make sure that you've got a soil they can grow in at least a little bit. Make sure that you've got some fertilizer that's available to them. And also make sure that you mulch at it to some extent around the plant so that the other weeds that are there don't take over. If you can possibly put out landscape cloth before you plant all these things, that's great. But depending on how big the space is, you may not be able to do that. So the idea is that if we get something else growing, we want to cultivate just that. So this is actually a case where those bottles that you hook to the hose and spray the fertilizer, oftentimes it turns out to be the best way to keep them growing. So that's ground covers on a slope from me to you this morning. I have had several choices in my life. I've grown a bugleweed, the ajuga, on a small slope, and it did very, very well, but it was not a gigantic area. It was like, 10 by 4, so it didn't go down. It was not a sharp slice, but it did. It was too difficult to mow and stuff, and it also needed to look better because it had a sign in it. So that's why the ajuga did such a good job there. I like holly fern. I think this is one of the good uses for English ivy. We, of course, a lot of people use liriope, but in a circumstance where you're trying to avoid weed eating, I'd rather have something that vines. And ground covers, of course, come in clumping types that make a center and then spread out a little bit with more plants like the ajuga. But if you've got one that vines, it can vine, and also those vines can root as they spread themselves out. That's just a different, different way of looking at it, like Asiatic jasmine does, or like the English ivy does. Okay. Lots of good choices, and none are appropriate for everywhere. But I will tell you that if I was going to put in something, if I had a shaded end of something and I was going to add a ground cover to it, I really like Artesia. Artesia is a pretty plant. It has good winter colors because it's evergreen, which is what we're always looking for in a ground cover area. And it also has really pretty berries. So it's just one of those things I like very much. Nancy has 75% topsoil and 25% fine sand. She tilled it all in. Do we need to lime it, or what type of plant food? If the area has grown other plants, you probably don't need to lime at least the first year. That's something you would want to check on later on. Maybe the second year, before you plant the second year, you'd probably want to do a soil test to determine whether you needed some lime. But if it's growing well, you don't need to worry about that the first year. I tell you what, about in terms of plant food, it does depend on what you're growing. But if you're going to be growing perennials, you probably want to put a little bit of fertilizer into the bed. When we make a new bed, we don't want to be feeding the weeds. So if you have an area that you're just about to plant, be sure and put fertilizer in each planting space. But if you're just building the bed and leaving it until, say, to plant maybe in the springtime or something like that, then go ahead and do some fertilizer, because that helps the micro and macro organisms and the soil get busy too. You don't want to do both things. You wouldn't want to feed the whole bed at the same time that you were planting if it was in springtime, because then the weeds are going to grow as fast as the plants. So if you're planting this fall, plant each of your plants with some fertilizer in its pocket, and then let them go on and grow. But if you are planting the bed next spring, fertilize it now so that it can be in better shape. It does help to have things mellow out for a little while before you plant them, if you possibly can. I would, in terms of what type, I would be looking at some kind of an organic. If I was going to mix it into the bed for the bed, I would be looking for an organic balanced fertilizer. And there's a bunch of them out there. You wouldn't, you might use, I'm not going to try to name a brand because I don't know what, would be available to you. But there are some, there's some really good choices, and every garden center, every co-op has one. The reason I say organic to build the bed is because it has all of what your, the micro and macro life need, but it also has a really good benefit when you first plant. There'll be plenty of nitrogen in the bed, and all those other things will be in better condition just because you took that took the time to do that. If you don't have access to that, put in a general purpose fertilizer, and as I say, it will mellow out by spring too. Okay, good stuff. Good questions. I think Trey is on to something this morning. I really do. I'm always impressed by how much better people feel when they garden. And this is everybody from, you know, the four-year-old that you're taking out to plant nasturtium seeds all the way to someone in their most senior years who rolls that wheelchair up to a bed that has been lifted up so that they can be accessible. That changes conditions in any kind of congregate living facility just in a heartbeat. If you didn't happen to already know that, gardening makes a big difference to people who mostly live in the four walls of a room or a couple of rooms. And that's not a terrible thing at all. Gardening can be added to that part of the world and as easily, sometimes easier than it can be, say, to you or me. I've had plenty of friends who lived in apartments with no balcony. Yep, that's where that extra light comes in. We're going to do the supplemental lighting and talk a little bit about how we're going to get those indoor plants going. I'm going to take your phone calls, take your texts in here, and probably talk about some more things that you haven't even thought about yet. Like, oh, I don't know. Today is National Fetch Day. What do you suppose fetch actually means? Stick around. We'll be back.
Customers, a whole home energy upgrade. The Propane Energy Pod Builder Incentive Program. What's the Propane Energy Pod? It's a total home energy upgrade that combines high-efficiency propane gas appliances to meet a home's major energy needs and delivers superior comfort and efficiency compared with all electric homes. Not only is it good for homeowners, it's good for builders, too. All propane homes, on average, are valued up to 5% higher than all electric homes. Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit mspropane.com.
Constant economic changes can be tough on businesses. The Mississippi Department of Rehabilitation Services understands that. Our agency specializes in connecting businesses with qualified employees with disabilities. We understand the unique strengths and skills these individuals bring to the workplace. From paid internships to on-the-job training, we provide resources to make it easy for you to find the right fit and build an inclusive team. Unlock new potential for your business by contacting our office at mdrs.ms.gov.
Spring.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome in. I trust that your autumn gardening is going as well as mine is, which is to say, there's a lot to do. Are you busy? I hope so. Corinne's been busy. She's been to a plant swap. Thank you all very, very much. She got herself some really good-looking stachys, some lamb's ears. But as happens, and I'm looking at a piece like just like this in one of the, my beds that I just planted, the stachys will get its leaves out at the very tip end. This is lamb's ears. Y'all know that gray plant that's really sweet. It's sort of a ground coverish type plant because it only gets about maybe 8 inches tall, but then it sends up a very tall flower, so it doesn't exactly, I don't know, it doesn't qualify as a ground cover to me, but it does cover a good bit of ground because it sends out, it'll make that long stem fall down, and then new plants will come up at the base of it, and that's what's happened with hers. So the long stem has fallen, and the new plants are coming up at the base, and she's curious to know whether to cut them way back, plant them as is and cut them back in the spring, or overwinter them in the container. So actually, any of those things will work. But because the conditions are so nice for gardening right now, and frankly, digging and dividing perennials is just brilliantly done at this time of the year, I would go ahead and plant them. And as I'm planting, I'm probably going to cut some of that stem off if it is inhibiting the way that the new leaves coming up from the bottom are going to sit in the ground. That top part can root. You may not get much out of the stem itself, but you will definitely get the leaves that are at the top, and a couple of inches of that stem will root as a new plant. You can certainly have both. But I would go ahead and plant them, and it's going to be a good maybe couple, 3 weeks at least, get them established in the ground is all it takes for that plant. So, yes, I need to be doing that myself. She's exactly right. I do like lamb's ears. It is one of those plants that has a reputation for not being favored by deer. I've honestly never seen a plant that a deer wouldn't eat under the right circumstances. But for the most part, they will avoid gray plants, and they will avoid hairy plants, hirsute plants like this that have a little down on the leaves. So it's a good choice for that situation. Joe in Madison, this is really interesting, Joe. I'm looking at your plant, and I can almost remember the name of it. I think it's a mugo, but I'm going to have to look that part up. However, what this is a very dense ground cover of a sort that is juniper-ish, but it's not big juniper things. These are tightly coiled leaves. Beautiful, beautiful plant, and one that I'm fond of just as he is. I love that he has it out by the mailbox, but he says the sprinkler system hits it once a week. Maybe it needs more water, but the section in one side of it has turned brown. I don't think this is all that unusual in a plant like this. It looks like it's a mature plant. And they can lose a section, just that one section ages out, and new growth will come and replace it. So I'm hoping that that's what's going to be the case here. I would trim out each one of those that is browned out and at this point, and just see what can come back. It may not grow back until springtime, but it's certainly not doing any good. When a plant has to hold on to an area of itself that has clearly died, it is trying all the time to pump some water and some nutrients into that spot, even though it's futile. So why not take that off and let it be pumping that same water and nutrients into some place where it might get some, be of some help, or where this area can regenerate if it possibly can do that. So that's what I would do. It may have been a lack of water. It may have been a dry patch. It may just have been maybe too hot for a little bit of time and then too much. You know, there's just a lot of things that can cause this kind of an evergreen to have a bad patch. But all told, the plant is beautiful. It is one of those beautiful things. I'm going to remember the name of it or look it up for you. And I do think I know, but I hate to say if I'm wrong. So I'll look it up. I'll look it up and tell you. I am really fascinated by the things that give us so much joy. And of course, honeybees are one of them. We have got a brand new bit of work. The crop production requiring pollinators, of course, increasingly relies on the commercial services, which is a problem in itself in that we're growing things that are not natural for that plant. That is to say that their microenvironment is not there. Their pollinators don't exist in that environment. Yet the growing conditions are good, so we go ahead and plant there, and then we have to bring in the pollinators. it's kind of, if we are also encouraging all of the native pollinators, I'm okay with it. But in some cases, in some places, they have already just about been wiped out. So the only choice is to bring in truckloads of pollinators. What we are understanding, of course, is that this industry is in tremendous demand. And in fact, it's not really all that unusual in some parts of the country to see the huge trucks full of beehives going from place to place. But here is a new set of work being done, because, you know, there was a couple of terrible years. Well, not just a couple. There was probably a decade of drought that culminated in a couple of years of terrible almond production. And the almond growers and the pollinator people have now been working on their contracts. And it is, I think it's going to be a better situation. I really do. The University of Illinois College of Agriculture and Consumer and Environmental Sciences has been studying these relationships between the commercial pollinators and the growers, the farmers, the tree orchardists. And it is, in fact, getting to be a little bit more, but for both sides. It used to be just you come in, bring in your pollinators, and then we'll send you the check kind of thing. But now it's actually more working with how the trees are cared for and what it goes into them so that they can be more easily pollinated, and also so the pollinators can survive the experience. So I like that. I'm very happy that that's going on. Honeybees, of course, are not the only pollinators. If you are subscribing to the Garden Mama newsletter, you saw a picture today, yesterday rather, of a gigantic bee on a penta flower. I'm celebrating penta flowers because I had never grown them through an entire season. They're still blooming. If I deadhead them, they're going to bloom another time. And I've never grown that plant to that extent. I've grown it in a flower bed and it looked okay and it was lovely. But this has been in a big container and it has just been an absolute magnet for the bees and the butterflies and everybody. I'm not even that crazy about pink flowers. It just caught my eye, and I planted it. So I encourage you to add penta, P-E-N-T-A, to your list. Here's one on supertalk.tv that I will encourage you to put on your list, too, and that is plumbago. Plumbago is not going to be completely hardy. It's another one of those marginal plants, but it is spectacular right at this point of the year in zone 8, and it's perennial in zone 9. So it's one that you can grow in a container even in zone 7 if you have a sunny exposure, because you're going to want it to get up and grow, be growing, you know, really rapidly through the summer so it can bloom. And that's one of the biggest issue, of course, is how much time, how many heat hours can we get into this plant. And in the case of plumbago, it does take a good bit, but it is a very beautiful plant and one that I hope that you will encourage your garden to accept. It's blue. I know that doesn't go with everything, but I think every garden needs a little touch of blue. Maybe not a whole lot, but a little bit. I have been kind of fascinated by this whole business about fetch, and I'm just gonna say it. I didn't know, you know, I had no idea. There's so many things I don't know, but in terms of fetch, it really is an older word than you might have imagined. It comes from a word that goes back to the year 1000. 1000. What? You thought the bridge in 1697 was old, but it turns out this word is even older. It is related to the German word fassen, which means to grasp. Do you tell your dog to grasen that stick? You want him to grasp that stick? Well, probably not, but you tell him to fetch. And they're the same word. In the dog's mind, they're probably the same word because, you know, all dogs speak German, right? I mean, that's what I've heard. So anyway, somebody out there saying, what is she talking about? Tune in every Saturday and we will tell you all about it. Fun stuff. Anyway, the idea of to grab, you can, but you don't hear fetch. To me, one of the words that we're losing, we don't say fetch me that book. We don't, you know, we might teach the dog to fetch and bring it back, but we don't use fetch in our language as a general rule. But we don't use yonder either. And I'm crazy about both of those words. I like over yonder. I like being slightly vague. Now, see, there you go. The other day, an 18-wheeler full of bees wrecked up in Holmes County. I didn't hear about that. I wasn't referring to it, but it is a mess. You're exactly right. What happens when those calamities occur is, generally speaking, because, I don't know if y'all know this, but beekeepers talk to each other. And as a result, there will be a network of people coming out to work on that sort of thing. When I had bees in my house in the wall, I only had to talk to one beekeeper to find three more that were willing to come and help with the problem. So it is a community that depends on itself and depends on each other's, but they also understand how difficult things can be. So folks have to try and help out at that point. I like that. I wonder if fetching goes anywhere to kvetch, because that's also in German. Well, now I've got homework I'll have to do now. We'll have to find out about that. If you're going to teach your dog to fetch, though, I have to tell you it's a very difficult thing for some dogs, and some dogs learn it immediately. I think it has to do with the reward system. A pat on the head is enough for some dogs. Others need a treat. Just have to work on it.
And Hawk just needs another bird to go get. That's his reward. He is 100% fetching dog.
I was going to say he's a very fetching dog anyway. And yes, fetching does also mean attractive. We're not unaware of that.
Fetching. You know? Yeah, he loves to fetch. I mean, you know, I've never had to reward him with a treat. Just, you know, petting and tell him how awesome he is and how much, you know, how fast he is. He's the fastest.
You ever try to teach a French bulldog to fetch?
No.
They're not interested.
They're not interested. Not their thing.
They want the keys to the car. You know, they might go to the store for you, but they might not come back. So,
I mean, if I could run like my dog Hawk, though,
oh my goodness,
that's all I would do. I'd just run everywhere like he does. Just 100%. Yeah, it's
beautiful
amazing,
dog.
The endurance.
Beautiful.
And I got a lab, and she's quick, but nothing like that. That German short hair. He knows some German. Yeah, he's learned. He's had some vocabulary training. Mary's helped me out with that a bit over.
I like that.
He's got a good number of commands that he can work with in German.
It's important.
And he can. I mean, they really like when I speak German to him. He lights up. It's mm-hmm. funny. He's like,
he
what?
Likes it.
Yeah, it's like
mm-hmm.
there's something with the harshness or the how
clipped nature. Clipped,
yeah,
of the words.
It really mm-hmm. it works well with training dogs.
It does, and it also. I don't know how to tell you all this, but it also means that if you're somewhere and your dog's there, your dog may be the only one that listens to you because he speaks
nobody
German.
Else is training him in German, right? That was one reason I did that.
Well, I've always been in favor of that, you know. I teach my dog in French at one point so that dog would listen to me as opposed to any of the rest of them. But anyway, that's beside the point. Do we teach our plants in French? Yeah, probably do. Probably teach them in German, too. Today, among other things, dear friends, it's International Sloth Day. I should not tell gardeners this because we are not slothful people. But if you find yourself with a need to relax and rest a moment, just remember you're really not slothful until you're sleeping 20 hours a day and eating 4 hours. So you're going to do okay. You can be slothful slightly. I think hammocks might be considered slothful.
I think Elvis knew about this day at some
I'm
point.
Sure.
He's like, Sloth Day, I got
it
this.
Sounds good. I'm all
this.
About that.
That's one I can celebrate.
It's interesting to me, though, that, you know, they're arboreal mammals. You know, they're mammals, but they live in trees. Did you know? I didn't know this until I was until suddenly sloths came all over my news feed. There were terrestrial ones, but they're extinct. I think that's because they tried to sleep 20 hours a day on the ground. That's not going to work, and it didn't. They lost their edge there. But they are big creatures, you know. They're anteater. They're related to armadillos and anteaters, but they're 2.5 feet long in many cases. So if your sloth is, if your sloth feelings go to sleeping that long. Humans might need to see a doctor if they're regularly sleeping 20 hours a day, but the sloths are just getting into the rhythm. So I know that there's a deadly sin called sloth, you know, the 7 deadly sins, things you're supposed to avoid doing to make yourself a better human. But I got to tell you, every now and then you got to just kick back. Think sloth, you know, that's the fire pit, sitting out by the fire pit. You're not actually actively working the fire pit. You're just sitting there. You're being slothful. That's great. It's very important. It's very powerful. I've now just given everybody permission to go forth and be slothful.
Do you think the sloth, though, may take offense to that, you know, he was named after one of the deadly sins? Maybe he's sitting back going, I don't think that's fair. I mean, you know, I do chill a good bit, but I am active, and I don't keep, like, a room full of clothes stacked up. And I mean, you
that's
think the sloth
true.
Is going,
that's
eh,
very true.
I'm not sure.
I think we as human beings are so judgmental that probably the sloth, probably one sloth said to the other sloth, did you hear that they're talking about us? And he went, huh, so what? You know, what do we
so
have to
it.
Eat? What do we have to eat? You know, but I will grant you that it puts it, you don't see very many like stuffed animals that are sloths
yeah.
because we have a negative impression
right,
of them, even though they would be very cuddly.
Yeah, that would, it would mean they look
they
cute
would
as
lovely.
They could be and like very snuggly and
but
cuddly.
I think that's probably why we don't.
Yeah.
We associate
teddy bear, that they're actually.
See, that's really, that's got a sad history too, frankly,
yeah,
but I love my teddy bear.
They're ferocious though. You know, they're not like going to come hug you. A sloth looks like they would. Like they'd come
that's true. They would just grab your arm and stay there.
Yeah,
for 20
up,
hours.
Yeah.
You know?
Seemed like we got that one backwards. Now, I don't mind it. It's just it's funny how the sloth got a bad rap.
Be interesting enough. I like it. Joe says, do I need to water? Oh, we need to talk about coming inside. I will do that when we come back. He wants to know about what doing, bringing the plants inside. What do you do? What do we water them with? Do we need to do something for them? There's a couple of tips about that and about grill charcoal. That's another good question. Joe always has good questions. That's great. How fun. All right. Now, I'm going to stop talking so you can hear the music so that you'll know. We'll be right back.
This couple they got married, so why not you and me? Oh, why not you and me? Oh, why not you and me?
That's getting there, that's getting there, that's getting more.
Hi, I'm Sammy the Shovel, reminding you how important it is to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig anywhere in or around any homeowner's yard. It doesn't matter if you're putting in a new mailbox, installing a fence, French drain, sprinkler system, even a flower bed. You need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig, or you could end up responsible for a water line leak, utility line with gas or propane, or even worse. Safety is in your hands. Call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
It's a big job keeping a whole planet fed. More American producers are turning to the fuel that gives them the power to do it, propane. With lower costs, cleaner emissions, and greater reliability, propane can do more around your operation better than any other fuel. And with an abundant supply made right here in the U.S., you're helping America stay energy independent. We've got a world to feed, so let's get to work in a clean energy revolution. Energy for everyone. Propane. For more information, visit mspropane.com.
If your engine is a diesel...
Good questions today. All about the gardens. That's right. Everybody does complain. It's true. Oh, my goodness. Joe has great questions today. And here's. Oh, by the way, we just got a picture of a sloth from somebody took in South America. Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you. Appreciate you sharing that with us. Good looking critter, too. I'm telling you.
Looks like he's having fun.
Kind of got it made. Kind of got it made in many ways.
Hanging around in trees and chilling.
You know, yeah. It's not a bad life.
Looks like he's having a good time.
He won.
Yeah. Maybe that was the winning hand, you know.
It could have been.
By getting that name, he's been kind of left alone.
I can live up to it.
Yeah, I don't have to do much, and people will leave me alone.
That's right.
I got my own little habitat thing working here.
I kind of like it.
You know, like a koala. You know, people go, well, that's, I want to go see one of those. Yeah. I got to have, oh,
gotta
I want to hang out with a koala.
Got to go see about that.
Yeah, but this guy's like, nah, they're leaving me alone. I got privacy.
I'm going to see the sloths.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. That's great. I love that. One writer told us that it's possible that Joe's plants next to his mailbox are a little bit too much of a target for the neighborhood pups. And Joe, I wrote that to Joe, and Joe said, yikes, we have lots of those here. So he's going to check on that part of it, too. They can indeed, if a particular plant is a consistent target of a dog when they go to relieve themselves, yes, the amount of urea in that urine can cause it to go yellow, can cause it to go brown, can cause it to just have too much going on. So it's just a natural process, nothing to be... No, you can't stop the dog, but you can try to direct the dog to go somewhere else so that the plant can survive. But some plants do take it better than others. That is true. Interestingly enough. Oh, Andrea has beautiful coxcombs. Here's one of those things that you love to be able to say, and I can't, you know, I'm just, thank goodness I'm here. I love being here because I get a chance to say, Andrea has coxcombs that she planted from seeds that she got at the Bottle Tree Tour last year, and now they're blooming this year. Andrea, of course, is the person who got me the candelabra seeds the first year, which my second year was a failure, but I'm going to try again next year. So we have year-to-year seeds. That's really fun. That's just delightful. Good question. What about the charcoal from your grill? Can you use it in the garden? You can put it anywhere on like a lawn or a vegetable patch. You can put it around shrubs, no more than an inch deep in a year. That's an absolute max, and I would prefer that was during the rainy season because it needs to dissolve. But you also need to know, don't put anything like wood ash or lime around things that prefer an acid soil. That would be the azaleas and the camellias, the holly bushes, your blueberries, you know, all of those kinds of plants prefer that acid soil, so you don't want to undo what's working for them. But for a lawn, which needs to be a little bit more neutral than our usually is the case for us, then we have to move on and let them have that. So give it to your lawn or give it to your other plants, but keep it away from the acid lovers. Okay. Interestingly enough, about moving the plants indoors, I did move some of my things in because they're very tropical, and they were getting beaten up by the wind when the weather turned chilly here in the central part of Mississippi. I'm moving the rest of the tropicals in this weekend, and frankly, I'm amazed at what good condition they're in. The first thing to do is take each container and groom it, get off any old plants that are sprouting up in there. We call those weeds usually. On the other hand, if it's one of your plant and it has multiplied, you may want to leave it or you may want to take that out and make a second plant. You also need to take off any ruined leaves, any old flowers, anything like that. And yes, keep a good eye out for bugs. If you find that you have bugs or you've had a bunch of bugs over the years in your container plants, you can certainly drench them. There are products made for systemic insecticide specifically in container plants that you can use for that. I wouldn't use the other products that you use outdoors if you use those because they generally smell. But the ones made for indoor plants, if you have a big bug problem. Otherwise, just water the plants well once. Fertilize them if you think they're going to need fertilizer in the next couple of months. Fertilize them right before you bring them inside. And you can take a mixture of dishwashing soap and water and mix that up and spray the plants down or drench the soil or both in case there's a bug that you haven't seen. But for the most part, they're going to be just fine. Light indoors is probably the biggest issue. Humidity can be a problem, but if we crowd the plants together, they can usually take care of that. Bigger problem is going to be getting enough light to them. So I'm always in favor of supplemental lighting. It's better for you too. So there you go. Oh my goodness. Beautiful, beautiful pups. We all love sloths. That's gorgeous. I love that picture. Thank you, Paula. That's fun. That's great. Andrea says, how to propagate this coleus I really love. Every year I bring coleus in and root it in water, and by Christmas it's slimy. Aha! Even though I changed the water, I'd like to try it in soil. That you are on to something. If you will root the coleus cuttings in water, and as soon as they have like even a half an inch of roots on it, which won't take any time at all if you put a little fertilizer in the water. Go ahead and get those potted up, and then they'll be much easier to keep. Smaller plants are easier to maintain over the winter than bigger plants in most cases, and coleus is certainly one of those things. Basil is another. If you have basil and you take cuttings off of it, or you have new seedlings or something, little ones are going to be easier to keep and easier to maintain than the bigger plants that you've been growing all summer. That is a beautiful, beautiful coleus. I like it. Lovely one. And I don't know, can you plant organic garlic from Whole Foods instead of ordering it online? I believe that you can. Here's the issue. Some garlics are treated so they won't sprout in storage. Traditionally, organic are not supposed to be that way. But since I didn't grow them myself, I can't vouch for it. I would certainly think they would be a good bet. But there's also garlic available at most garden centers and co-ops. We'll have a little bit of garlic for you to plant. Kathy, I don't know what that plant is. I was not able to pull it up closely enough or big enough for me to tell you exactly which of the basils it is, but it certainly could be. It looks like it, and the flowers are right, but I can't get it enlarged enough, clearly enough, and that's probably me, not you. My eyes are not great, but I like that. It's a beautiful statue, though, that you have there, by the way. That's lovely. And yes, a really good greenhouse. Really fun stuff. That's nice. That's wonderful. I am intrigued by all of the news around monarch butterflies. I don't know if y'all have been keeping up with any of this, but we really have got some interesting issues going on, in part because more and more people are interested in monarch butterflies, but also because the question is whether or not the issue for them is getting the migration done or if it's the migration itself. The monarch butterfly is not an endangered species. But researchers are finding that its habitat on the migration, not once they get to where they're going and not once they come up here to breed, but there are a couple of things going on. One is that as temperatures are changing, the milkweed is not only living a little longer each season, but it is also in some cases living farther north than it was. So that affects their migration. That affects whether or not they're going to leave a place or whether they're going to think that suddenly they've found, you know, the place that they need to be. There also are some other issues. University of Georgia is doing a lot of this. What they're finding through work of citizen scientists, you know how I love things. Anytime one of those things says, can you help us count, I don't know, hoot owls or whatever it is, I would say yes if I possibly thought I could see any and help it, because it is one of those cases where we build data and we're able to know more because we all are working together to find out more. We're looking at monarchs and hearing so many people say so many things about them, the new research may have actually answered the question better than others have. And that is, in fact, how come the wintering populations are declining while the breeding populations are maintaining their stability? Seems kind of crazy, huh? Well, it's not actually crazy. It's a little bit more, maybe the issue is that we don't really understand as well. But what we're trying to see is 17 years of data, 2,600 citizen scientists, I'm happy to say. And there are lots and lots of information along the butterfly's route. What they have found is that the size of the roosts, you know, where they go at night, and you've seen these in Mexico, probably, and maybe Southern California, photographs of the long columns of monarchs where they roost overnight. Well, those roost sizes have declined a lot, by 80% in some places, and those are the result of the loss from the north to the south along the migration route. So the question is why? Well, it might be because they're no longer able to migrate, or have they lost their will? It's not because they've lost the habitat, but some of them are understanding that this paper fills in the gap by saying the problem is sometimes they're staying. And they're not going fast enough. They're not leaving quickly enough. And then when the conditions change, they're damaged, and therefore they've been damaged in the migration because they didn't take off soon enough. And some of these things are simply changing conditions, and some of them are even more unexplainable. I'm fascinated by it, however. There are indeed some scientists are suggesting that the warmer parts of the U.S., that would be like us, are able to grow the native milkweeds, but we also increasingly plant the non-native milkweeds. And that in turn, the milkweed being the only plant where monarchs can lay their eggs and the caterpillars can feed, the year-round residents just kind of said, we don't really need to go anywhere. We're going to stay right here. And that's how things change. Things do adapt and evolve. I was looking at words this week. I know that sounds so dull, doesn't it? I can't help it. I'm just a word nut, and that's how it rolls. I did not know this. I have learned chrysalis. I have learned all of the pieces and parts of that, but I had learned, you know, egg and larva and pupa. That's the chrysalis, and then the adult, the caterpillar goes in there and goes into the chrysalis and becomes an adult. I did not know the word eclosion, and I'm so happy to know eclosion. Probably a lot of y'all know it because you studied more than I have, but this is when the chrysalis pleats separate, and in fact, when you're watching it, the butterfly becomes more visible inside that transparent casing as the chrysalis begins to dissolve. The eclosion happens when the butterfly pushes its way out of the chrysalis, grabs onto the casing for support, and hangs on while it's expanding its wings. So I really love this image to hold in my head that sometimes the most critical parts of a life cycle are not the ones that we necessarily notice or label first off. And in this case, it's the eclosion. It's the wings filling. Well, if that doesn't happen, then the butterfly's not going anywhere. If the chrysalis doesn't dissolve, then nothing's happening. The butterfly's not going anywhere. So the eclosion is a word that we need to add in. And I need to add in. You probably already have it, but I need to add it into my understanding of egg and caterpillar and chrysalis, eclosion, and adulthood, emergence. That's wonderful. It's a great, great word. But it is indeed a complete metamorphosis if all of these things happen together and in the time frame that we want them to. So much work is being done on butterflies. I have to say that University of Bristol surprised me. I did not know that we had ever studied butterfly brains. Think how tiny that must be. I mean, that's a chip you can't get in your phone. It's a little tiny piece, but so much information. How to grow, how to be, how to live, how to make more butterflies, what to eat, all those kind of things are all in there. But there's one species of tropical butterfly with unusually expanded brain structures. And in fact, it's almost a mosaic in the brain, which is what has made it so fascinating. The heliconias are the ones that they're talking about, of course, and University of Bristol is reporting in Current Biology. What they've seen is a remarkable ability to learn and remember the information about their food sources, the spatial information, like this one's here and that one's there. You know, these are things that we understand are extremely important just for the survival of any species, and to be able to understand more about how butterflies do this is a really big deal. Bristol School of Biological Sciences is one of those places where they just look at this stuff all the time. I always have this image in my head because I've known a couple of lepidopterists that they really do wander around just with nets looking to see what's out there, and I think some of them do. But what they have done is to be able to give us more information to help us understand more. And quite frankly, I had no idea how brilliant they were. But they got better brains than a lot of creatures their size. How about that? Something to think about. All right, now let's see where we're going. All right, let's go down to Bayou. We'll be right back.
They say that California's falling, Detroit's burning, whole lot of trouble in D.C. town. Nothing pretty about New York City. Mississippi, take me to higher ground. Oh my, Bayou country, smell a man only bring it to your knees. Fade out, don't the Cajun women, Spanish moss hanging from a big old.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
We are the people, Mississippians. We are the land, growing food, fiber, and timber. We are there when you need us, from the roof over your head to the food on your table. We are small town, but big moments, your next door neighbors. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation. 100 years and counting. Become a member today at MSFB.org.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law.
When someone asks a question and I think, I really ought to check this out because I think I remember this as I just remember this. I don't know why I know it. Ed in New Hope wants to know, where did monarchs get their name? And my immediate thought was Prince William of Orange. And I was right. It's Prince William of Orange. He later became King William III, is where I was stumbling a little bit. But at any rate, it is, in fact, the secondary title of that king. No, he was not redheaded. He was not a ginger. That was a lot of people have ginger hair. That's not a problem. But he was, his secondary title was the Prince of Orange. So that's where why they named this. He was named, however, by the European settlers, the monarch was. Saw it in the United States, because this was where the first time they had seen it, and they named it in his honor. Obviously, it had another name before that, and I don't actually know that one. But somebody will tell me. Somebody will send me a note this week and let me know, and I'll let you know next week. Because I know they have, one of the other names comes to mind, but I don't actually know what it is. Okay. I have big news for you, as if you didn't know this already. You ever hear me talk about the Duh file? I read a whole lot. I can't help it. And sometimes I read stuff and people are studying things and I think, well, I could have written that grant. And other times I think, whoever thought to even wonder about that? So amazing. Well, here's one that is definitely the Duh. Men and women process pain differently. You think? Come on. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Anyway, what we need to know, of course, is why. Because when it comes to pain management, we don't need to manage people's pain the same way if they're not experiencing it the same way. So that's what's been in, what this particular bit of work has been working to find out. University of California at San Diego has discovered that men and women use actual different biological systems. You know, you understand when medicine was invented, people began studying stuff. But because we have kind of a prejudice about humans all being human, we didn't necessarily study the differences of a lot of things. Some things clearly we had to study the difference in. Not everybody can have a baby. But we don't necessarily study things like the biological pathways of pain management. So what they have learned is that the endogenous opioids that everybody's body makes, okay, are the things that men that they're natural painkillers that the body releases much more readily in men. Ours are based on other, women's are based on other non-opioid based pathways, what are called the coping mechanisms, the managing mechanisms, or in some cases are called the endurance mechanisms, which are just different. So your ability, let's just say we both get an injury. Your ability to deal with the pain may come quicker, but mine may last longer. Okay, that's the point of this. And if we don't understand that as physicians or as pain management people or even as physical therapists, we don't necessarily understand what it is that we're dealing with. So I like having that kind of input from these folks. I think that's real smart. Interesting stuff. This is a good one. Do you cut back annual flowers like salvia? They're looking pretty right now. Yes, I will cut them back as soon as they begin to cut them for the vase. Certainly, if they're beautiful, by all means, cut them for the vase. And then the same thing happens if maybe one's not quite as pretty as the others. Go ahead and cut those back because there is a chance, depending on how the weather goes, it's going to be warm enough in, this is from Madison, it's going to be warm enough in Madison County this week to set some more flower buds. So that's something to consider and go ahead and do. Do fertilize them again and make sure if they don't have enough water that you give them enough water. But we can get another round out of a lot of flowers. In fact, that's what we count on because that's why we have sunflowers at Halloween. You know, that's why we have the flowers at a different point. It's not because they hadn't bloomed before, but because they bloomed and now we're encouraging them to do that again. This one is not quite the duh file, but it is interesting to me just because it's so obvious and yet not. There are presenting in the journal Science, which as we all know is a really tough one to get into, the enteroendocrine cells are very rare cells. They're so rare. I'm not that great, but I never heard of them. Probably a lot of other people hadn't either. They release hormones in your gut to various stimuli, and there's absolutely the case that one of the things we know, for example, is that the more you change your internal biome, if you have to take antibiotics, for example, you have to go back and repair some of the get some of the good guys going again. Mouthwash is one of those things. That's one of the reasons why you don't – there are many reasons why you don't drink alcohol in the morning, but mouthwash has alcohol in it. But one of those things is that it changes your biomass and changes a lot of the pieces of it, so you don't want to do that. But the hormones in turn regulate the key aspects of physiology, and before you eat, they are triggered. Your body is so connected, is the whole point of this, from your gut to your eyes, to what you're about to put in your mouth, that your gut knows already which ones to secrete and which ones not to. And if it's not working, it's something that we need to work on. And that's why this work is so important. It could result in new strategies to interfere with the release of the hormones or, in fact, to increase the release of these hormones depending on what the patient needs. So I look forward to having more about it because it is a fascinating thing. We always say gardening takes guts. You know, that's a big deal around here. And I have lots and lots of opportunities to give that really a whole lot of background. The more and more that we study all of these magnificent ways that our internals work, we do understand more about what we're putting in making such a difference. That's for sure. Madison County is also weighing in to say, yes, indeed, the geraniums do perk right up in the fall. That's one of those plants. See, if you grow it in a container, then you put the container in a shaded area when they start to look kind of crummy in the midsummer. Keep them growing. Keep them fertilized. Keep them watered. And as soon as these temperatures turn, geranium is one of the plants that comes back the quickest. It is a beautiful fall flower if it can make it through the summer. So I love that. It's real important. Very, very important. I can't tell you how much fun it has been this last couple of weeks to hear y'all, to get all the input from the remote at the Bottle Tree Garden Tour, and also then to hear about y'all talking about what Peaches and our dear friend Lance here have been pulling off for y'all last week. Y'all apparently had a rip-roaring good time.
I want to tell you something I learned. I did not know this, and I've been blown away. The beauty berry, before we get out of here.
He brought you the jelly.
Golly, where do I get this stuff, and what is a dang beauty berry?
The beauty berry
is
the most.
We've got enough time for you to
elevator
speech.
Beauty berry, magnificent native plant. It puts
the
out
prettiest color
arms,
and taste.
Beautiful arms with those purple berries all the way down, those beautiful arms, those purple berries are just like jewels in the fall.
Goodness. Yes.
And indeed, not only do they make delicious jelly, they're also one of the plants that is being most investigated as a mosquito repellent.
I was
so that's good news all around, man.
I mean, I need more beauty berry in my life.
We need a biscuit competition. I'm telling y'all, we need a biscuit competition so we can show off all this jelly.
Trust me, if you haven't had it, go find it.
We're ready. We're going to go look for some
you
more.
You can use it on your cheeks, too, if you need a little coloring, a little roux on there.
Thank
beautiful
you.
Beautiful colors.
We'll be back again next week with more of this program.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish. Then there is Superior Catfish.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.ms.gov.
Go with your gut.
Buy or sell at Mid-Delta's pre-harvest auction, Friday, August 8th. Tractors, combines, and more with live online bidding at msauction.com. Call 662-299-2414. Mid-Delta Auction, across from Cannon Motors.
A SuperTalk Mississippi Media Production.